Okay, everyone, welcome to another episode of Point of More Returns. Today, we're doing something a little bit different. We had plans to initially do a pod, but we came across some topics today, and it just got to wrapping on it, and we just figured, hey, we might need to take this live and just have this conversation in real time. This may make it not wake it to air, it may, but we're just going to see what comes of it. But anyway, basically, the genesis of this came from some conversation the Wall Street C and I self have been having back and forth about the futures of some industries, in particular the ones that we talk about most often with buyouts and real estate and private equity, and in terms of just seeing the charts and the trajectory and seeing how other firms have been pivoting in the industries and just noticing some trends. And so right now we were just having a conversation around that, plus the fallout with the recent ruling in the real estate industry. And I just wanted to just touch on a couple of things really quick. One thing with Wall Street C, as you all know, he just completed a deal in the real estate industry. And one of the more interesting things was that the value of the broker within that deal point. So Wall Street C, just got you here. Welcome. Just wanted to ask you really quickly. You mentioned that you were with the deal, doing, you were doing a deal that you had the broker along for the transaction. Just talk to me briefly. If you had the chance to jettison the broker, would you have done it?
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, so we're talking about the value of the broker and if I would continue to use like an agent and the broker system, all that stuff. So the recent ruling was, and I don't remember because it's been a few weeks, but basically there was an article that just came out and said that, and keep me honest with this, but it was something along the lines of if the agent, you would be able to like negotiate like the commission rate or percentage with your agent or broker. And that's been like traditionally a little bit different. So personally, for me, like the how I'm using the broker, I would, yes, I value having a representative representing me on my behalf. So, yes, I believe in the value there. What my argument always is at what cost? And so just being able to negotiate like the actual percentage, I think is just like anything else. It's like you can sometimes kind of negotiate like what amount you pay, like just like any other good or service. So I think there are opportunities there. The concern if I'm an agent or broker is it's like, well, you're diminishing like the value that I actually provide. So that's just sitting in their perspective. But for the deal that I just closed, like one, it was a out of town deal. So I needed like eyes and ears like to actually go through the property, but I could have probably done a lot of the negotiation directly with the seller. But just because of how I have everything set up, like with my other obligations, whether it's business or personal, is like, no, I need like boots on the ground and tell me what's going on with the property, what's going on with the neighborhood. So there's definitely value there. But my argument, like I said, is always coming down to at what cost. Like, am I comfortable with paying 3.5%, 4%, 6%? Or do I really want to negotiate for like 2% depending on what like the purchase price of the property? So that's really more of like along the lines of what we were talking about. And just where real estate is and how it all ties into like private equity is the Mass Investor shared a really interesting video about like the future of private equity and potential like bankruptcies or failures within that particular industry. And then what would be the fallout, and what we pretty much theorized was a lot of these firms that don't like go under, they're going to pivot into real estate just because of stability. It's a tangible asset. It's not hard for people to like follow. But then we talked about how legislation could be like a deterrent for a lot of those large investment funds. So it'll be really interesting to see what happens and what falls out. But I'll flip it back to you, man. Like, what, I'm rambling. Like, what do you think would be, I guess, the fallout with real estate and private equity in that intersection?
Yeah. And it's mentioned, funny that you mentioned that negotiating the rate from your broker standpoint, because I imagine that that was probably somewhat of a pain point, depending, you know, obviously if you have a big hulk like a Blackstone, you're probably already negotiating with the broker with their rates when you come in, if it's not set by law. But on some of these smaller deals, or if you're a smaller firm, you don't demand to have to push people around. One of the sticking points for your return is going to be that entry cost. And if you have to pay 5% to the broker and you're targeting a 20% return, I mean, just simple math, you got to get that 5% back already out the gate, you're down, right? And so I see that as more of a catalyst to actually influence people to move that way, right? Because you're knocking down one of the barriers, right, to get in. So with that said too, how do you feel about that too? I mean, do you feel that that may increase competition on some of your deals? Do you see that kind of as a net neutral? Where do you see that lining up with, the fees, and in terms of also taking into account that, maybe there won't be the same number of brokers competing for it as well? What are your thoughts around that?
Yeah, that's a really good point that you're making. Is it's like as a smaller firm, I didn't have the capability really to negotiate the commission, but a larger investment firm like a PE, like KKR or Blackstone or whoever, they either already have someone in-house that like that's on salary, or they just have staff, or they've already done the negotiation to where their entry point is a lot lower per property if they're going playing in the same field as me, like residential, right? That's a very good point. But what do I think the fallout of all of it is? I mean, I think the cream of the crop, they're gonna rise. So like the agents that were already have established books of business, like I think they'll continue to thrive. Like they may take somewhat of a hit, but they'll continue to innovate and figure out a way to stay in business. And a lot of the people that are on the lower end of the totem pole in terms of like them building their real estate business, then they're gonna struggle. They're gonna have to supplement income, do something else. They may end up doing real estate part-time instead of full-time, things like that. And I feel for them, and that's something that that impacts people. So I don't want to gloss over it. Like that's a real thing that impacts people on a personal level. So that's potentially the downside of like being able to negotiate. But in terms of like a business practice, I do think it makes it a little bit more equitable between the agent and the consumer, instead of like whether you like the service or didn't like the service, the commission is paid if the transaction closes. And that doesn't necessarily always feel good, because I've had great agents and I've had not great agents. And the percentage was the same across the board. It's like, well, the good agent didn't get extra and the bad agent didn't get less. And it's like, that's not really how it's supposed to work. Like it is supposed to be a meritocracy, but you're only going to be able to do that based on what you're able to negotiate. And then
Right.
sometimes you really don't know if someone's not a good agent until after the transaction closes. So it's a lot of different moving pieces and caveats to it.
Yeah, there is. And then the other portion of it too is once you, which is what we were also discussing earlier, and I imagine there's some of this going on with real estate portfolios too, where maybe not as hard to easy to conceal, because you have some readily available metrics, right? Like comparable transactions, square foot, price per square foot for certain areas, things like that. But one of the things you were talking about was like the opaqueness inside of the portfolio, and how you can put it in an asset and essentially just, mark that to whatever value until, you want to either sell it or something else has to happen, right? Where they gave the example of that basin transaction where they essentially had the value marked up to, close to where they purchased it until, one day they had it marked up to their appropriate value, and a month later they filed for bankruptcy and had to mark it to zero. With your real, someone getting into that, let's say, as we did in 2008 when people were buying these properties and, doing all of these just different tricks to sell them and, securitize them and get them off of their books. Well, what about as a real estate holder, if I was to put that inside of a fund and just hold a bunch of these properties, Would it be easy to mix portfolio in value, maybe, and hide it that way? Or let's say I own some properties in Florida, some properties in Minnesota, on some properties in, I don't know, Hawaii, right? And so I, doing my reporting, are you reporting that at the individual level, or are you just mixing the portfolio together and just giving one type of number out to your investors? What are your things about that?
Yeah. So just to preface, what the mass investor is talking about is like the private equity firms, what they do is they have like a mark to market where they're supposed to like every year, I guess, like give an update in terms of like the asset values of their holdings. And just that check-in is called like a mark to market. And keep me honest with this because it's been a while for me to talk about it. But essentially, a lot of these firms don't mark down their assets because they need to like go raise capital and like going from 100, I'm just making up numbers, 100 billion in assets to like 75 billion in 1 year is not a good look. And you're probably going to get a lot of questions and hesitancy in terms of being able to raise more capital. So they don't necessarily update and downgrade what the values are for the low performing assets. So that's one, make the argument that's fraud. But to answer your question specifically, I think if the PE firms like they decide to go into real estate, all that's going to do is give a lot more stability to their portfolio. Because if you have tenants, you have an idea of what the rent roll will be, what you're expected to get, and you can make an assumption for like vacancy or like late payments or non-payments. Like you can easily, put an assumption, put a growth factor on that in terms of figuring out what it'll be for the year. But yeah, I'm pretty sure they're not going to go into individual like holdings, like identifying what each individual property is. Like they probably wouldn't even do it by region. Like they may say like, oh, 50 in Southeast or 100 in Northwest or something like that. But no, they're gonna do a summation and have all of the properties like in a portfolio and just report out on that because it's gonna look more stable,
Right.
it's gonna look more impressive, and like you said, the opaque, like the ambiguity is gonna serve them better. So I'm pretty sure that's how they would like represent the numbers.
Okay. And to the thing, yeah, it is, but it's also pretty commonplace. I mean, as we saw with Trump, right? He's actually, under the gun right now for essentially inflating his assets, right? In order to get funding and real estate and traditional investments inside of his portfolio, right? But if you saw the discourse, a lot of people were crying about that when he got indicted. It was like, yeah, it's pretty common that you're gonna do that, then you're gonna shut down a lot of business and stuff. And he's right. I mean, it is pretty common. I mean, I read in numerous books. I mean, most recently I completed the Caesar's Palace book, and they were talking about how they would move assets around and inflate them in order to keep the values high, just to get some extra time from their creditors, so they wouldn't be forced into bankruptcy to sell that company, even though it already was bankrupt years ago. They were able to, through creative mechanics, able to keep the thing afloat long past time than it should have been filed for bankruptcy, just through inflating assets. But that's the thing that is so just realized, came to the realization, it's just, we're just one big hot potato. And when does this actually hit and start impacting things? And when it does blow, where does it blow up, and how big is the impact? And what can you do to run for cover, or at least maybe profit off of it even, right? And so the other part of for that then, so if you were going to put it in those different regions, as you said, and have it marked, and let's say you're a bit more aggressive, you're not a conservative holder, you're a little bit aggressive, you're trying to go for that Billy, and you got the get rich or die trying mantra. What if it starts to blow up? Let's say you got some assets in the Southeast region and things aren't going too well. What are some moves that you would do, or you think you would, you as a, not saying you would do it, but if you had to, what are some things that you think would come into play to either buy you more time or get out of it altogether?
Oh man, that's loaded. You're pretty much saying like put on the hat of I'm investor for a large private equity firm, and what do I do if like the asset value starts to drop? Is that what you're saying?
Right. Let's say you've got this portfolio of properties and they're in different regions, and your Southeast region is just getting hammered. Let's say they had a big factory, it closes, so people are defaulting on their properties, your rent payments are being missed, so that portion's just not performing. So what would you do?
Yeah, it's only in my mind, it's only a couple of options. I mean, without, and this is completely off the cuff, there's only a couple of things you can do, right? The moral and ethical thing is to just mark it, right? Just say, hey, this is what it is. Like, that's easiest, safest, and will keep you out of trouble. So let me start with that. The other option in my mind
But you
is,
get rich or die trying is your mantra. So
oh, for
what's
this
your,
particular person. Well, this, I mean, if this particular person sounds like they're a little bit willing to play in the gray, be a little amoral. Not me or what I'm just speaking in terms of like this particular example. Let me make sure. I mean, they're probably gonna do what's being done right now, which is not market, right? Like just say, oh, it's still 100 billion. Like everything's fine. Like kick the can down the road and hope that the values recover, right? Hope the market value comes back in
Right there,
said
right
time.
there. You right there. You hope the values recover. Hope the values recover, huh?
Yeah.
So you're holding and hoping the values recover. You're just either A, hoping nobody's snooping around and gets wise to it, nothing leaks, or they don't figure out, someone does a deep dive on what you've acquired and look through property records and try to figure it out. Like, nobody's really going to do that without the time. So you hope it recovers, and it does. Let's say it does recover. Everything, no harm, no foul, huh?
In the situation, if the values recover, yeah. In the
No harm, no
situation, if you
foul.
don't, you're in hot water, right?
Okay. And that's what the trouble stops if it doesn't recover in time. So then, so what's the wreckage from that? So all right, so maybe you can take some revenues from other places and direct it to cover the losses on that side, right? So if you've got, let's say you got a portfolio, the Northeast is performing well, you've actually been able to raise rents and you got cash flow steady coming in. I guess you direct some of that revenue to, or even, and this is what they did, with the Caesar's Palace thing, is like you just take, one casino, and you basically you group them into two entities, right? And you put the good casinos in one entity and the bad casinos in another, and then you write that down or something like that. Or you just take the assets and move it in there to cover up the losses. And so you basically have a property from the Northeast. Let's say you got 155 West Connecticut Street, and you group it in there with Southeast properties, right? And you could just do some creative stuff like that, right?
Now that what you're saying sounds like you're operating in a legal space where it makes sense to do that. Like ethically, legally, at least on face value, it sounds like that's okay. Some of what you said was I don't recommend or I don't think that's a good idea. I think the first part, like the former, what you were saying is like, oh, well, you can just, I guess, keeping them separate. Like, okay, here are the bad performing companies, and then here's the like the corporation of like the good assets, and then you mark it down. Like, okay, that's a strategy too. I think that makes sense, but it's probably easier to just kind of lump them in, like the high performers, to kind of offset the low performers into one like corporation, and then you have a couple stinkers along with like the good performers, and then it's more of a balanced portfolio for each, and then have several like corporations to do that. That's probably, and I don't know, I mean, maybe they're doing that. Maybe, I mean, this isn't like we're just conjecturing like off the cuff. Like, it's people that spend hours and hours and are like smarter than I'll ever be that think through this stuff. But I'm assuming that's the way they should think through it. But I got to make the argument. I don't know if they are because they're not marking down the assets. So it's like, is the performance just that bad? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, and that's it. You don't know. You don't know unless you're inside of these companies. And even if you're inside of the company, you have to be at the highest level to really understand what's going on. 'Cause it's all it, you know, I mean, you're working in the company, you're seeing people get laid off, and you realize the company's doing bad, but you don't know that, hey, our company's owned by, ABC Private Partners, right? And they're marketing the portfolio as doing well, even though you're not doing too hot, right? Or even, you may not be doing as hot as you should. Let's say you're not hitting the number that the company set for you, but they actually have a different number that they're designed to hit at that private equity level. You may have to hit 100, let's say your target may be $1 million at the company level, but they're only targeting you to do $700,000. And if you don't hit that, even though people are getting cut, it doesn't look good, it's still good for that, for that fund. So there's just a lot of different ways that this is played that, they can kick the can, even though it's already blown up, right? So, which brings me, I guess, to my other point is, okay, so it blows up. Where's the opportunity in that, right? Which is what we were trying to look at. So 155 street is all being grouped in. So I guess the way I would see it was either A, if you know it's blowing up, you could go to them and maybe give them an offer to buy it out from them at price that's worth getting it. They can, but then that was, they'd have to realize that loss, put it on their books as a loss, but at least they're out from under it. Or at least from it going to zero completely because of their cost, right? I guess that's the thing too. Like if I bought a house at 150, property value drops to 95, how long of a runway do I can I actually hold that? As a small investor, you don't have much time, right? You gotta just take that loss because you can't carry that, if you're the rents was $2,000 that you modeled in, and now you're only getting 12. I mean, how long can you go before, it's just time to get rid of it, right?
That's right. That's right. I mean, what you're talking about is like a very high level. I mean, like me, I can't just walk up to Blackstone and say, "Hey, let me buy your like low performing assets," right? Like, but it does happen. It won't be from someone at my level in terms of like, "Hey, you have a portfolio of a million or a couple million," like versus someone that's coming in with like, $100 million or $100 billion asset. Someone's going to be able to buy those assets like pennies on a dollar. It's just that it probably won't be us. So then it's like, well, what's the other alternative to how we can actually capitalize or, like you said, take cover so you don't, like, your investments don't take a hit? Like,
Right.
I can't remember the deal, but like a similar situation where it was like one of those investment banks got in trouble like many years ago. This is decades ago. And then there were some type of way they got roped in with like the long-term failure, and they asked like Warren Buffett to come in and buy the investment bank, but the
Yeah,
price
Goldman
was too
Sachs,
low.
too low.
It was Goldman. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, he got in Goldman for like a from like cheap, penny cheap warrants and stuff like that.
It does happen. Like the failure at like that high institutional level, it does happen. It's just like we like, well, not even we, me and like the size of my portfolio is like, I won't be able to capitalize on that, but somebody will. But to your point, it's like, what other opportunities are there for us? It's like, do we start shorting like private equity? I don't know. Like,
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Like even Burry, right? He didn't like, Bill Ackman, he made his money all that money off of from COVID, right? He was able to short. And even Burry, right? He didn't have a direct way to short it. He had to call into the investment banks and come up with a way for them to come up with a product for him to actually short the housing market, right? So, I mean, maybe the product that we need is not even out there, but I'm just trying to think of what's the, there's opportunity here to get something. It's just trying to wrap your heads around what is it, and how do you do it, and then also the time, because again, even remember with Burry, he was right, but the time he did it, if he didn't have, he wasn't smart enough to put his documents in that investors couldn't sell out of his and liquidate. He would have had to close up shop, right? Because everybody else was like, "Well, what are you doing?
Yeah,
This is going bad."
he could have potentially lost his shirt on that. That's a very
Yeah,
good point. And
yeah.
also, he had enough, if he was just a
Conviction.
regular investor, yeah, like he wouldn't have been able to just call these banks and say, yo, make me a product. Like, what do you mean? Like, I can't do that. Like, yeah, make me a product so I can short these private equity. Like, I won't even get anybody on the phone. I just don't have that level of like power, right? But it's a really good point of what you're saying is like the product may not even exist. And being able to come up with an idea for a product so you can sell it to me so I can buy it so then I can like execute my trade ideas. Like, that's some conviction and that's like not easy to do. And that's why it was so impressive. It's like no one's doing this. No one is has the foresight to actually short this particular industry right now. Like, it was a
Oh,
gutsy
I'm sure
thing.
there's people shorting it. They're just not in the paper until after it blows up. And then you'll see the story that, oh, back in 2023, what's his, such and such at B&B Capital
Was shorting the point.
was shorting these private equity portfolios,
That's fair. That's a fair
It's
point.
just not gonna
I
be in the
agree.
mainstream press. But it's
Maybe we start there. It's like start looking at who's shorting them, like, and then figure out why.
Or what are they doing to do it, Because it's not like you can hold a hedge against, but and then it's like something obscure. Maybe it's like, you don't directly short the portfolio, but you take a position against the debt that they're holding, or I don't know, there's an employment index of portfolio companies, and you're shorting that the employee count's gonna go down. I don't know. Just trying to think of the different scenarios to that would be impacted, and then how you can maybe get exposure to that. But that's
Yeah, man.
crazy.
I totally agree with your sentiment. We probably would need to spend enough time to like actually dig through some of
Right.
these companies and just see like what the holdings are and like see whatever articles we can dig up. And
But the
I don't
other
even know what
point
to.
is, how do you move right now in that environment? I mean, we're still trying to do deals, right?
Yeah.
Definitely in a, much, much more competitive environment. I'm just not, from what I'm seeing, is a it's not as many deals out there, quality, that it was in the past. And when it does, there's more competition for them. So, you're commoditized to an extent. And maybe you're not as commoditized, but definitely on my end, don't think that you can offer is capital.
Oh yeah, I mean, real estate is definitely commoditized. I mean, they got platforms where you can just put in $100, right? It's like, okay, we'll do everything for you. Just give us the money. Like, it's can't get more commoditized than that. It's just when it becomes like prevalent in every type of like real estate, whether it's like high end, low end, like mid market, and it's getting there, right? But that's when I know we're really in trouble. Like when they start looking in like the sub markets and they're not like looking at like metro areas and they're doing the same thing and it's commoditized and it's just everywhere, like it's prevalent everywhere. It's like, yeah, it's a wrap. Like, I don't, what else do you do? Like, we just got to completely pivot to a different business plan, like a business idea or something, because it's just going to be like oversaturation, I feel like.
Yeah, and I don't know. It's times I just wish I had some type of God's eye where I could just pull. Like, I guess you do have some fun data with the Fed, where you can see like money, a seller, flow of money and things like that. But just some type of, And that's the beauty of being at, these banks where you have your Bloomberg terminals and these analysts who can crunch numbers and get your report. So you can get kind of an idea as you formulate a thesis and figure it out, okay, well, how much money is going in? How much is available still? And that's what gives them the advantage, man. I mean, that's just it in a nutshell. I mean, we have a level of visibility and stuff, but just when you were at those internships and things too. I mean, just the amount of information they have is just a little bit more, right?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, it's the access of the information and the speed of the information, right?
Right.
And the fact that they're like literally eating, sleeping, breathing how to make a dollar around the clock.
Right.
So how do you, not saying you can't win, but it's highly difficult. So how do you compete with that? It's like you just have to be creative, like we always say, and like keep going, keep thinking. But I really appreciate it. I love the way that you're thinking through it and like how you're coming is like, oh, this is a potential opportunity, and worst case is a way to just take cover. But
Yeah.
that's probably what we need to think through is like, how do you actually do that?
Right. Well, I do realize, like, dang, man, I'm almost 20 years late. I mean, what, they went public in 07, 08, so Kravis and all them, I mean, they saw this years ago, right? 2 decades ago. So I don't even know what they're on now. I mean, I can only imagine because of what they've got access to, what they've seen, where they've been, their experience, who they're talking to. I mean, they just, it's just a different level of operation. I had a different level of respect when I'm going through this exercise. Just like, man.
Yeah, I mean,
Well,
I agree. It's,
yeah.
I'll say this last thing. I know you're wrapping up. I mean, also, he kind of like pioneered the whole LBO business.
Industry.
So, and that was
Yeah.
what, in the early 80s, was it?
Yeah.
So I think they've all, like, all of them too, like Schwartzman, all of them is like, yeah, okay, LBO, right? They did that for a couple of decades until they thought like, oh, we're tired of like shaking a tin cup and asking for capital. Oh, let's like take it public so we don't have to do that, but we still don't want to disclose our holdings, that type of thing. So let's form the business where we can get access to public markets but still have that level of ambiguity, right? And
Yeah.
now they've diversified the business. That's something we didn't even really get a chance to talk about, where it's like, oh, we've diversified the business so we don't have to rely on like PE deals anymore. Like, we don't even have to rely on that, right? Like, we have securities, we have real estate, we have deal making. I don't even know what other businesses they have, but like, they're touching so many different industries at this point. And so, to your point, is like, okay, they've done that. Traditional PE is not working as, and it could just be a cyclical thing, right? Like, maybe it spins out and everything's back fine, like it was. I don't know. But
Well, it's
to your
definitely
point,
mature now. It's in,
yeah.
that's the mature stage.
Yeah. So to your
Yeah.
point, it's like, who knows? But it's like they have always been like one step ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. They pioneer, pioneering. They have been one step. That's what a pioneer does, right?
Yeah.
See an opportunity. But the only other thing too, again, is that Bill Gates thing, right? It's just, right place, right time, and happen enough of experience and education to be able to recognize that, hey, something shifted so that you can move on it when it does, and knowing what to move on when it does pop up. And those are just, golden. All right, well, cool. This is definitely not the end of this discussion, but at least it's good to talk through some stuff and get some gears turning. All right, well, we appreciate you all for tuning into this episode. Like we said, we just off the cuff. Thank you. Hope you got some stuff out of it like we did. This is the master investor. No, this is the masked investor in Wealthfare signing out. Thank you. Until next time.